Okay, this is a blog post. This is gonna take people back. This is from the 27th of October, 2009, at our friends from DelawareLiberal.net. Now, this was written by a contributor there at that time, Liberal Geek. I think they went over to the Blue Delaware site after the schism, and then they were shut down due to stealing other people's work. But we're not going to talk about that right now. What we're going to talk about is this blog post from 2009. Congratulations all around for Fisker. The press conference / pep rally for the announcement that the Boxwood Road auto plant has just concluded. We will now refer to the plant as the Fisker plant. I am still in a state of shock. It was a tour de force of Delaware politicos. Huge kudos are in order for Governor Markell for his attention to this issue and for putting together this event. Getting Joe Biden was the perfect touch. Some key points. One, Joe Biden still has it. Two, Delaware Online might not have a future as a newspaper, but as a broadcaster, they rock. Three, Jack Markell knows how to woo businesses. Four, combining this with the smart grid announcement today by President Obama will position Delaware in the catbird seat. Geeks are cool again. Fast cars don't have to burn through gas at a rate of 10 miles per gallon. Healthcare reform is essential in bringing the economy back from the brink. If you missed it, don't sweat it. Here it is. Watch and feel the goosebumps.
And today, that new chapter begins.
Well, from the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast, I'm Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Hello. We're joined by historian Dale Norwood tonight. Hello. Dale has a little lesson for us. We were talking about a week ago about some stuff, and as is his sort of, well, it's his job, really. He went out and figured out a bunch of historical stuff for us, but we'll get to that in due course. The first thing I want to do is just briefly mention something. Last week for the Patrons Only episode, we said a lot of crazy stuff. We stand by all that stuff. My opinion of this country is plummeting, is circling the fucking bowl right now. And one of our very close friends here in the neighborhood hangs out with all the fellas, cooks, comes over to barbecues. He has season tickets to the Philadelphia Union. He was taken by ICE on February 5th from his Wilmington apartment at 6 a.m. on a Thursday. I was traveling at the time. A lot of us didn't find out until just recently. We're doing our due diligence. We were able to talk to somebody who spoke to him, and he's okay. But, you know, I don't know whether we'll see him again, ever. So, you know, not that this is a big shock to anybody, because this stuff is happening, but just be on your toes, because for the medium future, we're going to be in a bad way, so be on your toes out there, everyone, because it's pretty shitty. Now, we can get into some fun stuff. Number one, and Dale probably saw this as a dapper sort of New England gentleman. We had to really kind of bust our boy, Senator Buxton, for some sartorial mistakes.
Some faux pas.
Yes.
And, you know, these things happen sometimes. That's fine. Today, I regret to tell you that Buxom is still a bottom fastener. He is obsessed with fastening the bottom button of his jackets. I don't know why he's doing this. It's really, Bill and I sat down today. We tried to, I don't know why he's doing it, folks, but it's wrong. It's ridiculous. He looks ridiculous, and he has to stop doing it. We can't have this. He's trying to look. I read in Spotlight Delaware, it's a huge Delaware GOP resurgence happening, and he can be at the vanguard of it. But he's got to stop fastening his bottom button because it's fucking stupid.
Can I share a story? I got read for quite accurate fills today by a student for my fashion faux pas. Not as egregious as the senator. I'm a much lowlier offender. But a student walked in and said, you know, I just read this article about how you know, men's workwear, the kind of pseudo business casual that everyone wears, is just kind of George Washington ing it up, meaning the famous uniform that George Washington wears, where it's a blue coat with buff yellow pants. That's his like colonial, that's his Continental officer gear. And there I was in my, you know, khakis, blue shirt with my blue suit coat hanging or sport coat hanging on the door, and they were like, well, I was going to send you the article, but I'm not changing your ways. And I was like, all right, that's, you know, accurate, but also woof, like target hit, you know.
You know what they say, you know what I say, sometimes you get somebody's ass, and sometimes they get your ass. So yep. they got your ass. But that's actually not as for a
university professor, for an academic, the you know what we're expecting is, you know, the flat front khaki, the blue shirt, you know, maybe some tweed. We could possibly see tweed.
You know, the weather's turned, so there was no tweed, but you know, that's in the closet for sure.
Sure.
Yeah. There's some hound's tooth, you know. There's some wool linen blends.
Some knit ties with the squared off.
Listen, bottom. I got some striped ones, you know. Do they represent any particular college? No, but they could, you know, it could look like I'm you know, I got the beard. You know, as long as I'm staying above the Mendoza line of the shirt's clean, it's tucked in, it's not covered in chalk. Like that's where I hope to live on these things. What? But we'll see.
Well, and that's the thing. If I'm being honest, the reason we're so difficult on our friend Senator Eric Buxom is because he's going out there. He's wearing he's wearing tweeds. He's wearing pinstripe. He's wearing like a lighter color blue than normally you would see on a professional person.
Right. He's out there acting like he's going to a press conference as a player post game. You know, he's aiming for walking into the stadium kind
not
of
not even the
know.
Player. He's like the assistant coach who had to coach because the head coach got ejected. And then he has to come in and explain, like, yeah, we lost by 25, it was hard losing coach, you know.
You know, we're just out there to win, and sometimes we don't hit it, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
But exactly. Yeah, he's trying to snazz it up. And so, like, honestly, to be perfectly frank, if you're just, you know, out there grinding, you know, and you got, you know, you wear a suit or whatever you wear, and you're making some mistakes, you know, maybe, and you know, I don't like the cut of your jib for whatever reason, I'm probably not going to say anything because that's not your
right.
That's not your
but
deal.
You step outside the lane, then you attract attention, and you got to have that flawless.
Start wearing
you stick the landing.
You start wearing Canali jackets and shit. You can't be fastening the bottom button. That's
Those shoulders, if they've got piping on them, if that collar, you know, if you're doing weird collar stuff, you gotta land it. You gotta stick it.
Yeah, no way. We're not having it. We see you, buddy. And look, we're doing this as friends to help. We're trying to help.
Do you think like those big trucks like that he's mentioned he drives, like do you think there's like a suit book in there? Is there like a jacket? Do you keep it pressed in there in the back row? Is that what those back doors are for?
Well, here's the thing. He possibly has hangers in there. That's possible.
Uh-huh.
I, you know,
I think he does seem to favor some sort of like heavier fabrics that maybe don't wrinkle as
Don't worry
much.
about it as much. Yeah. Okay.
But he seems to be a guy who might just lay the jacket on the seat on the seat. He might be, and then it just that's what he
You know,
does.
8 feet
I don't know.
wide, you got the width on that, right? You know, that's why you're backing into the parking space, is so that you can have that, you know, you can get off at a moment, you can get out at a moment's notice, and your jacket won't have to hit the floor because the with the acceleration. So there you
Look,
go.
if you fasten the bottom button, you might as well throw it out the fucking window. For all I'm concerned, it's just because it's worthless. So Dale, this is the way that I sort of came to this idea. A few weeks ago, you were in, and we had a long discussion that was sort of centered around one of the Trump economic people. I guess it was the SEC chair or the FTC chair or something like that.
SEC Atkins, yeah.
Atkins, yeah. And really, that kind of what we did was sort of just go through that a little bit and try to think about what some of the reactionary, sort of powerful federal agencies were going to be looking for from Delaware around sort of like corporate governance, like what kind of changes, what kind of things the legislature would do. But there's a second part of that, and it's sort of connected to like the big data center issue, which we're not talking about tonight. I'm sick of talking about it right now. We'll get back to it in due course. But as you guys know, I don't talk about what everybody's talking about. Go listen to everybody else talk about it. I'll tell you the f answer when they're done. If you, that's fine. But the issue that's connected to that is crypto. It's blockchain. It's like Coinbase. And frankly, nobody knows what this stuff is. But what we do know, and it's something that Bill and I discussed last week on the show, was that Delaware specifically loves a scheme. They love revenue from some sort of flim-flam or weird structure that they're just pulling sort of money out of, as we don't even know where it's coming from. It's just like fees. That kind of stuff. Like we have to file your stuff, and so we just take the money out of that. But all of the stuff that stuff sort of supports is mostly fake. And so I was concerned because, you hear Meyer, the Meyer administration's definitely on board with it. They love this stuff. And I wondered what's around that could be done to sort of open up a space for crypto and this kind of stuff to go absolutely wild, and you were able to sort of pin down a few trends that we should be aware of as we move forward on this stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, who knows what's coming down the pike? Who knows what lobbyist has got, you know, the ear of powerful, important legislators who definitely understand the bills they're working through. But one of the things that's happened recently in Congress, and stop me if this is a shock to anyone, Congress is not working out so well in terms of passing legislation, which, you know, on balance where we are, maybe that's a net positive. But the biggest force, or the biggest recently new force that's pouring huge amounts of money into federal races, into state races, and into the Trump family's pockets is crypto, right? And that's kind of coming back from the dead. We all remember the football, you know, the Super Bowl commercials that like marked the peak of crypto before the crash. And the Biden administration had taken a less friendly approach to it, but the Trump family's all in. They have their own cryptocurrencies. They do rug pulls on the regular, that kind of scams to generate high prices and then exit the market themselves. And at the beginning of the Trump's term last year, the crypto interest wanted to put together three bills to really secure their place as the parasite around the American financial system, the United States' financial system. And there was three bills with that. One is the Genius Act, which allows banks to does a lot of things, but it allows banks to invest and hold st with forms of cryptocurrency called stable coins, which you know, are coins that are supposedly stable because they have a one-to-one conversion to the dollar. But it allows financial banks and bank charter institutions that have fiduciary responsibilities, like responsibilities to their depositors, to hold stable coins. Another piece of legislation was to ban the Federal Reserve from issuing any kind of digital currency. So that's crypto really looking out for itself, not getting any competition from people who know literally how to make money and manage money on a national scale. So that bill is the anti-digital currency bill. And then the third piece of legislation is the so-called Clarity Act, which does a bunch of things, but basically it scatters regulatory authority over cryptocurrencies between the SEC and the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. So it splits the authority over what kinds of crypto, what kinds of crypto might have regulators. And that's really kind of I think one way to understand that is an insurance policy. If there's ever an administration that cares about, massive financial corruption, well, if you've split the authority, you've made it that much harder to prosecute them. And then one of the big questions over the last decade or so has been, is crypto a commodity? Is it something that is bought and sold like, pork belly futures or beef or cotton or wheat, and then it would be governed by one set of authorities, regulators, that's the CFTC, or is it a security, meaning it's something, it's a financial, it's a claim on, it's a derivative claim, it's a security that can be bought and traded on financial markets, and then it would be the SEC, right? And they have different transparency requirements, and this is a kind of early 20th century, let's try to stop so many people from getting scammed kind of thing. So the Genius Act passed. Delaware's House represent passed the House, I should say. Delaware's own Representative Sarah McBride, who is one of the legislators who has accepted tens of thousands of dollars from crypto lobbying groups, she voted yay on that. It hasn't passed the Senate yet. The digital currency ban hasn't gone anywhere, and the Clarity Act just stalled out. The Senate has really started taking an interest in it because the banking lobby. Has really it would really gore their ox, and so they've really stepped up their affairs in trying to block it. So that leads to kind of, okay, so what are the states doing now? And one thing that's happened in the last, again, like 10 5 or 10 years is that some states, not yet Delaware, but some states have started passing legislation that allows financial institutions, crypto institutions, to attain a status that might give them access to the financial system through the Fed. And specifically, New York State created a system where digital asset managers and digital asset issuers could register as a special kind of trust, and kind of work like a very limited kind of bank, and then or trust rather. And the state of Wyoming, the great state of Wyoming, the inventor of the LLC, which we know and love in Delaware, don't we, folks?
We love it.
Which Delaware adopted quickly thereafter. Wyoming in 2019 and through 2019 to 2021 passed a series of bills and amendments that allowed crypto issuers to acquire a special kind of state bank charter known as a special deposit. I'm sorry, I should get the language. It's an SPDI. Special Purpose Deposit Institute institution, and that is a that Wyoming has declared that a form of custody bank or custodian's bank. Wyoming calls it a custody bank. Other people in the industry call it a custodian bank, but it gives it a bank charter. And we can talk about what a custody bank, and it actually has its roots in neoliberal reforms, and the reason that we all have 401ks that people are stealing from is because of this creation of the custody bank. But that allowed some firms to apply for state bank charters. One of them, which goes by Kraken Financial, but is actually a Delaware incorporated business called Payward Incorporated. This past week, Kraken Financial, legal name Payward Inc., acquired a access to the Federal Reserve as a master account. So that's not being a full integrated member of the Federal Reserve System, acting like a bank fully with natural access to where the money, what gets made. But it gives them access to intraday trading and allows them to convert what Kraken insists on calling fiat currency. You and I might know it as the US dollar, things denominated in US dollars into cryptocurrency and out of cryptocurrency very quickly. So it allows that transfer of money that's accepted most places in the United States to private money. It allows that transfer to happen much more quickly. And that is a result of the Trump administration staffing up with all these with all those people at the Fed. So the implications for Delaware is if Delaware is going to do something and change its financial system. What can a state do? Well, a state can do what like Wyoming did or what New York did. And that's Delaware's been historically Delaware's kind of move is to take a new kind of vampiric or parasitical approach that grants private corporations much more power outside of the state and issue a small tax on it and then allow the state to be this vehicle. So that's what happened with the corporation law in 1899. That is what is what happened with the expansion of LLCs. And, you know, as our friend Carl has been writing about, and that is what happened to make the Delaware way and remove the limit on, you know, borrow a South Dakota innovation and remove the limit on credit card interest rates and thus make Delaware a center for credit card companies. So
before we get too far afield, I want to ask a few questions about this.
Sorry, that was a bit of a monologue.
No, that's perfect. I sort of need this information to be able to formulate some questions. The first thing I want to point out is that LLCs were, as you said, in Wyoming, were invented. They don't like grow on trees. They don't exist in nature. So there's no like the forces that we're talking about are just invented things. Very important to continue to nail that down. That's the first part. Everything in all the federal changes that you discussed are going to sort of illustrate what could be done in Delaware. But what is being done is this Delaware LLC doing business as the Kraken has now been able to, under certain rules, been able to be sort of treated like a bank. Maybe not in full fledged, but so they're already doing that. Is that right?
Yeah, and not just a bank, but you know, a state charter bank is relatively limited in what it can do because since the Civil War and the creation of the national banking system, to be a bank that can exercise full powers and operate all across the country, you need to be federally chartered or have access to the Federal Reserve System of banks. And so this Kraken Financial has taken kind of a side approach into that, getting a state charter, and then which allowed it to petition the Fed for this kind of account with the Fed that will allow it to do this kind of moving in and out. So it's basically added it's been given a seat at the kids table, but you can steal a lot of turkey at the kids table is basically the idea here.
Yeah, and I guess I want to get to the idea of the custody bank because I just love like weird terms of art like that. But I guess the thing that is important to keep in mind is that any kind of invented financial instrument, let's say, let's create something no one's ever heard of. Let's take little bits of loans, of mortgages, and package them together in a financial instrument.
Uh-huh. A bond, let's say.
Sure. And we'll package those together. But what that will do, because people are buying those up, what that will do is the people who actually make the loans on the other end of it are just going to make any loan and jam them into these we'll call them CBOs for lack of a better term, and they're just made up. They're like, you know, we can bet on, like, if the line goes up, the line goes down. If people pay, people don't pay. Like it's just watching the line, right? What we also could do is create a secondary market on the thing we made up to sort of call it insurance and do I don't know what you would call, maybe you would call it a credit default swap. Something like that.
You could just call it, you know, it's an easy to understand name. Yeah.
Just coming off the top of my head.
Yeah, right off the top of the dome here.
I'm hearing what you're talking about, and I'm having this flashback to, like, sort of as you said, what created the Delaware way. Like, all this stuff, we already did this before. Like, this is not, it's new technology in the sense that you can figure out a new instrument to sell that doesn't really mean anything. It's funny about currency. The fiat puts the currency in currency. There's no fiat, there's no currency.
This is a big argument among historians, right? Like, do people, like, what is money? Whoa, man, have you ever thought, like, what is money? Like, there's that Onion article.
I'm going to
like,
light, you know, another, like, one up over here.
Yeah. Fed chair just, like, stares at hand as he considers money's not real. You know, I think what's interesting about this set of stuff is that it is money that they're creating, right? That's what cryptocurrency is claiming to create. And the argument they get from people who don't think what they're doing is money is that it's not It doesn't actually emerge from any kind of system or framework that gives it value that backs it, as the phrasing goes. It's not backed by anything. The U.S. dollar is backed by the full faith and credit of the United States, right? At various times prior in American history, it was backed by gold and silver, and then gold and silver, and then neither. Blah, 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 blah.
So there's this idea that saying because the government creates the money. By saying they're going to spend it. That's the fiat part.
Well, yes. And although fiat is the like ultra libertarian term, so I avoid using it because it's like giving Milton Friedman a win to call it fiat currency.
Hey, you know what, buddy?
Because like the government also creates coins, you know? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But correct. There is some kind of hard stuff. But the point I've always heard in arguing with like the Friedmans and the libertarians is like, first of all, they're creating money. Well, they're creating something that they're giving a value. And of course, that value is denominated in fiat currency, of course. How else would you do it? So they are, but there's no, you can't pay your taxes with it.
Right. So and that's what, like, so there's people who argue, like Christine Dasan at Harvard has taken the what you're articulating is the constitutional view of money, and that is that it's governments that constitute money and make it fungible, make it something that you can exchange and that other people will accept because they accept taxes in it. Right. And there's another view that says, well, you know, people do use kinds of currency that their government doesn't create and they don't have anything to do with. And the U.S. dollar is actually a really great example of it. There's billions and trillions of U.S. dollars that are created by being deposits in foreign banks that never touched the United States. And that was true of even currencies that you could drop on your foot and say, ouch, like the Spanish dollar, which was minted by Spain, but circulated well beyond the Spanish Empire and including was accepted as currency in the United States because people believed other people overseas would accept it and that gave it value. So there's this like social construction is it always governments? Is it governments and culture? You know, it's kind of up in the air. I'm a little bit more in the middle as that suggests, but government has an important role because it is actually, you know, a government somewhere is creating this or some kind of polity is creating this. And that's what the cryptocurrency people are trying to do. They're trying to take their made up private currency and turn it from something that you can just gamble with to something that can, that has to be legally accepted. And that then you can then leverage for other to create more exotic financial instruments.
Yeah, because if there's one thing we need is more exotic financial instruments.
Man, the weirder the better, right? If it's got ears, it's got a tail, maybe some stripes. Oh, we just need it more, you know?
I remember the first guy that explained to me, this would have been late 90s, 98 maybe. The guy who explained to me just derivatives, just like puts and calls on derivatives. And I was like, he's like, do you get it? I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get it. Like, I understand putting $100 on Tennessee to cover 6.5 at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I get what that is. I just don't understand, you know, it's for the sake of creating your own wealth and creating more exotic financial instruments that people don't understand. And I don't know what, like, there's no, I think, like you said, as a culture, as a society, as that end of it, as that aspect away from sort of the constitutional view, you know, we sort of need to say, like, yeah, we don't want that. Like, that's not adding anything. Like, that doesn't, you know, that's not for us. So hopefully that's sort of the stance I always take on it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. I mean, you know, every day brings us another aspect of American society that is like not just like a mirror version or like maybe it's kind of like the Gilded Age. It's like just like literally the same thing. And this is a really good example of, or even the antebellum America. You know, I mean, this semester I was saying to you before the call, I'm teaching a course on American capitalism. One of the things I do is teach, you know, what a private bank, what a state chartered bank is. And then later I teach them what a futures contract is, so a derivative. Yeah. And at this point, I don't think the students believe I know anything, and I'm not, and that I'm making that I'm be rooted in any kind of reality. They just think I'm crazy. Like it couldn't possibly work this way. And you're
folks,
like,
folks, finance and economics is not real. It's just made up.
Right.
Like there's no, when people talk about economics, like you don't understand economics.
Well, I understand what you made up. Like I understand how it works, but it doesn't grow on a tree. It doesn't happen in nature. Everything is things we create, our inventions, and how we interact with it. There's no natural part of it. Economics is just telling you a story of how the thing we made up. You know, it's not like a measuring gravity.
And it's really recent. I mean, like futures contracts, for example, there was a big court case in the late 19th century into the early 20th century where now we have all these betting sites that claim that they're markets, right? And that's why they're allowable, is they're not just gambling. It's a prediction market. That just recapitulates. There used to be a form of betting on prices where you could go down to your local, they called them bucket shops. And you could go down to your bar and there'd be a big chalkboard and be like, oh, I think wheat's gonna hit, $10 a bushel next month. Put me down. I wanna bet on that. And those got ruled illegal because, unlike commodities markets, where the same thing was happening, but higher level and it for more amounts of money, the Supreme Court of the United States said, well, the people at the bucket shops don't ever contemplate delivery. There's not actual wheat that they have to deliver if the bet pays out, right? And so if you buy a contract for future wheat, in theory, you have to deliver the wheat. In practice, that never actually happens. That's not how any of this stuff works. But the Supreme Court said, as long as you close your eyes and contemplate delivery, then it's legal, and then we allow it, and then it's actually good. But if you don't close your eyes and contemplate delivery, wrong. And it was really a class division on these things too. It's who gets to hedge risk. And at that point in the Gilded Age, America decided only the richos get to hedge risk.
Yeah. Well, we'll actually talk about that in a minute because I want to finish up with kind of a fun story. But before we do that, can you talk about this custodian bank or the custody bank a little bit? Because once again, I love terms of art like this that don't really, they just mean whatever you want it to mean. And I always think like, okay, again, they're creating a category of something to make something look like something else. That's my first sort of like that's where my mind goes. So yeah, what is this thing?
So, my understanding is not very in depth. I want to just kind of frame that. I'm just a simple country history professor, right? What do I know? But a custodian bank, or what the state of Wyoming in its legislation calls a custody bank, which is an interesting, must be the Western dialect here. But a custodian bank is when the Studebaker company just went out of business and failed to provide any kind of pension coverage for all the workers who had been employed for a wage and a pension. They just didn't honor it, and that left several thousand people out of luck. One of the reactions to that is eventually something that's called the ERISA Act, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, which passes under Ford in 74. And ERISA is kind of like, those graphs where like everything changes with Reagan? Like ERISA is like everything changes with ERISA in finances and things like that. But so ERISA says, well, you have to do a number of things when it comes to employee pensions and employee retirement plans. But one of the things you have to do is you, the employer, don't get to manage this money anymore because obviously you can't be trusted. So that has to be in the hands of a fiduciary, and the institution created to serve that need is a custody bank or custodian's bank, where they keep custody of all those pensions and invest them in a way and manage them in a way and allow withdrawals and all that kind of stuff in a way that fits the terms of the act and also fits the terms of the employment agreement. So it's taking all those pension things, not off those companies' books, but moving them to somebody else managing them. And that actually helped create this huge pool of capital that kept seeking higher and higher returns on investment to cover retiring workers. And that's why you have, giant pension funds investing in things like private equity and AI and crypto and stuff like that. That is part of the reason, we've moved to this kind of quarterly cycle of like, we need to see gains now. It's partly, billionaires want more billions, but it's partly because there's these huge pots of money that are created in various institutions, but as a result of ERISA, that are seeking higher returns because they owe pension obligations and retirement obligations. So a custody bank is just managing that. And so what Wyoming said was like, well, Kraken, AKA Hayward, you're not a custody bank, but you have to, but you're a thing like that. Your special purpose is that you hold all the crypto and you back it 100% with reserves that are highly liquid as determined by our bank commissioner, who is a guy that doesn't even have a photo on the website up there. But the idea is that they're keeping a one-to-one, so it's perfectly liquid. Everything is perfectly backed, according to, you know, like John Boy there. So
yeah, but again, great term of art. Everything is backed by something that's liquid that somebody will whatever.
Yeah.
They're like, and it's like the whole sentence trails off. Like as soon as it gets to the who's delivering the wheat, like as soon as you're closing your eyes and thinking of a delivery idea, then the sentence always trails off. And it's like, and then we'll just you know, there'll be somebody there. They'll look at it.
And if you don't pay up, well, I guess you'll get sued and your business will go under. But that's okay, because all you were was a Delaware corporation, which, as we know, is a non-entity that doesn't really pay taxes and isn't traceable to anybody.
Yeah,
so,
remember those mortgage CBOs I was talking about? Like, if they all fail, what could possibly happen?
Yeah, if you've got CDOs and, you know, what could be collateral about that debt obligation? I guess it's someone else's shirt, right?
Yeah, there's a collateral in theory.
Right. Right.
Like,
yeah, and I think the reserves here are in theory.
The sentence always trails off.
Yeah, and it's interesting. This financial firm, like they're a cryptocurrency exchange, and they make their money by charging people on trades, just like FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried. You know, that's that same thing. That's what they were doing.
Where does he live now?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Michael Lewis wrote a book where it says he's a very nice young man who plays just the right kind of video games. So that's the nerd now. But you know, why would a company that wants to make money on trading want to just be a very boring institution that just holds things one to one? Well, the answer is they don't. They wanted to use that as a way to get Fed access so that they can make trades and pump money in and out of the crypto markets, because that's actually US dollars are actually the currency they want to store their billions in, not cryptocurrencies. So they want to be able to move back and forth.
They want to store their billions in US dollars.
I mean, that's why they want to. The parasite
dollar?
Drinks the blood of the host, right? That's what's going on here.
Oh,
so
come on, the fiat dollar. That come on.
Outmoded. So outmoded. So Brian Armstrong says it's yesterday's news. He doesn't need Congress, but he does.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. You can give me all your U.S. dollars if you want.
Yeah, and I'll hold them. I'll be the custody agent.
Yeah, we'll form a custody bank. We can look. We're right in Delaware. We're right here.
You could just do it today. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll just and look. We'll look at them and be like, you know, these big piles of cash, this is so outdated.
You don't need this. What you need are, you know, Trump coin or whatever his World Liberty Financial, also a Delaware incorporation.
You know, and it's funny. This is a good question for you, just a funny sort of maybe a little buffer question. But you were talking about those bucket chops and stuff. And I was like, I'm sort of familiar with those kind of numbers where you can go in and do this stuff. And obviously it's bad for the reasons that it was made illegal. But it almost seems like, hey, you know, they're just – it's almost like gambling. We have a problem now with some of these markets and the way that things are done online. But gambling just exists. And we had to kind of try to manage that.
We don't. Gambling used to be limited, and you at least have to go talk to a mobster. Sorry, the heavens have opened up here. Used to, you know, my Uncle Jimmy had to go and borrow money from the numbers guy down at the bar to pay for his dates, or else, right? But or gambling used to be limited. You had to go physically. There's breaks on it, right?
Right.
And now it's kind of everywhere occupied, you know. People are doing it on their phone constantly. Yeah.
I've told the story, and I'll tell since you're there, you'll surprise. I went to the University of Delaware, prior to the cell phone. You're familiar with it. And when we were making bets, I remember being at Delaware Stadium at games and having to go out at halftime and use a payphone to update to call the bets in.
You know,
uphill
in the snow both ways to lose money on a failing Delaware football program.
Look,
that's commitment.
That's commitment, man. I thought Clemson could cover against South Carolina. Look, I thought it was a fucking. I was told it was a 50-star lock of the week. So
you know, I gotta say, I don't know what you know. This is probably the growing up in New England or growing up Catholic. There's more than a little of the Puritan in me. I try not to let it infect me too much, but it has kept me from any kind of interest in gambling. Like I react like someone throwing holy water And I just like bleh, I just like get, you know, and I it serves me well these days. I'm not tempted at all, which is not any moral fiber. It's just like it just seems gross.
Yeah, I lost too much money. I had, but luckily, I lucked out because I burnt out when there were still like guardrails, and I couldn't get that far. You know, a few $1,000 at that time was like, oh my God, I'm gonna die. But I realized how bad it was like early, before I had an income stream. You know, really. And so I kind of lucked out, but yeah, I there is something if you're a sports guy, and I don't know, the kids these days, Carl's on, these kids these days, I don't know what they're doing. They don't
They're
drink.
gambling on their phones, man. They're
They're
gambling on
gambling on their
their
fo
phones.
they're gambling on their phones. They're playing video games at home. They're
Yep.
not
They're playing video
drinking.
games at work. They're playing video games in my class.
They're not doing enough drugs. All your students don't aren't doing enough drugs. I can tell you that. I
I can't
know
speak
that.
to that one way or the other, and I hope to never, but perhaps, you know, who could say? Who could say?
They don't seem as cr I don't know. They just don't seem as crazy. You know, we were ridiculous. Yeah, the whole thing is gambling. Like, I think that's what people sort of need to understand. It's as soon as it becomes untethered, and it's funny because it is very funny to say, you know, you have to think of wheat delivery. But you do have to think of like something that exists, some kind of value that exists somewhere. You can't just make it up. It has to be the productivity and the potential productivity in the country. You know, economic productivity, whether that's labor, whether that's stuff we can build, whatever it is. It has to be tethered to something. If it's tethered to nothing, and then that's also tethered to nothing, we've been down this road before. It's no good.
Arguably, we've never been off this road, but yeah, I mean, this is one of the classic,
Correct.
like, you know, this is
We've been
what, you
off
know.
this road, only onto the shoulder, and then having to be pushed back on the same road, basically.
You know, and it is, I think this is the, it's all the gambling stuff, with all the people suffer because of information asymmetries because of private banking. Like, this is how it was before the Civil War. A dollar was the unit of account established by the federal government as legal, you know, account. They made coins, silver and gold, but any kind of paper money pre to the Civil War is issued by a state chartered bank, which in states, some of them had attempts at regulatory stuff. And all the banknotes said, if you deliver this to this bank on, you know, our open hours between 4 and 5 o'clock on alternate Thursdays, we'll redeem it for, you know, gold and silver. That was the backing, right? But actually what happened in practice is that banks went bust all the time. Banks were fraudulent. Banks didn't keep the reserve ratios, yada, yada, yada. So all the paper money flowing around that people needed to buy goods and services were paid in, you know, all that kind of stuff. You had to know whether or not that bank was fraudulent or this bank was solvent, and if it was, or what the current news was. And most people, especially working people, did not and could not have access to that information because they weren't running the banks. And so what you had was a transfer of wealth from the people in the know, or a transfer of wealth from the people who didn't know to the people who knew. And that's effectively what's happening with all of these crypto currencies as well. And this is why the kind of element of the rug pull, somebody gets on social media, promotes a currency, cashes out just as it's getting popular, and then the value crashes. Well, all your fans got hosed, but you made it out okay. And that's like a thing that happens every other week these days. And so there's an insider trading and an information asymmetry that is now being bolted onto much larger financial institutions, and that's and gambling, and that's very dangerous.
Yeah. So last topic. It's sort of tangentially related to this. Now, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. This could be shocking. I want everybody to sort of take a deep breath. I was just reading about it this week. There's a guy died in jail in New York. Jeffrey Epstein, I think is his name. Are you guys familiar with this guy? Real nasty dude. Anyway, beyond the sex trafficking that everybody was fine with, apparently, you know, there was an origin story that basically, to me, And you guys can look into it yourself. It's like a money law.
Do our own research. Do your own research.
But I think it appears that, you know, this guy was able to make some connections in the 70s and wound up basically laundering money for people. But he was also a pederast. You know, he was a freak. He's a sicko. He's a monster. And so he had the money, and he was able to build these networks up. I don't know if you guys have been following it. But there's a guy in the UK, and the reason I bring this up is because people like – there's a lot of people in this area who are, like, tied to these banking systems. And a lot of them, even going back to MBNA, but even now, are, like, bought-in sickos, like sycophants. Like, they think the CEO is, like, some kind of leader, like, leading them into the whatever they're leading it. And it always made me mad. And so the reason I mention that is because this guy in the UK, this guy Mendelssohn, I think is his name, he's a lord. Well, he was a lord. I don't think he's a lord anymore. They also have a prince who's not a prince anymore.
Yeah, they're getting rid of a bunch of lords and princes. It's kind of, you know, they might be a republic in a couple of weeks here. It might be quite a revolution.
Throw them in the trash. So back in the day, in the midst of this nasty sort of like, almost like a spy and money laundering network, but this guy was able to put like academics in touch with other people, you know, and he's like, plus they're all being blackmailed. You know, Bill Gates got the syphilis from a 14-year-old Russian woman. Sue me. I swear to God, I would be happy to be sued for that. Or you can beep that car, whatever you want. I don't care. But it's nasty stuff. So Mendelssohn has an ear to the UK government. This is about 15 years ago, something like that. And what he finds out is that they're going to, after the market crash, this would have been 2010-ish, I guess. The UK government was going to levy tax on all these bankers' bonuses.
A super tax. Not just any tax, a super tax.
A super tax. Yeah. And so Lord Mendelssohn at the time and this pedophile sex trafficking guy, money laundering guy, Epstein, they're talking. And they're like, oh, we got it. How did you get this information? Oh, so-and-so is getting ready to do this. Oh, this is so bad. Let me put you in touch. Let me put Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, let me get him on the phone with like the Chancellor of Exchequer, whatever the fuck it is. You know, they're all fancy lads.
I mean, let's not throw stones here when we've got a court of chancery, right? With vice chancellors,
well, you know what?
we got some fancy titles here. You know, exchequer. You play darts, you follow cricket. You know, exchequer's just part of your day, Rob.
That is, you know what? You know what we were talking about earlier about getting your ass. You just got my ass on that. You know, I'm watching cricket with like, you know, guys that are playing like first slip, second slip, deep gully, deep backward square leg.
You know, those are words I can't really say in polite company. So there you are. You're just kind of getting right in there. Yeah.
So you did get me on that.
But yeah, so not only did Jamie Dimon get this information and lobby against this proposal through these two intermediaries that were international sex criminals, you'll also find out that JP Morgan Chase is in a very, very difficult legal situation with the municipality of the U.S. Virgin Islands, I think. You might want to check that out because a lot of the executives that were working for Jamie Dimon look to me, to my, like, look, I'm just making a speculative, I have no idea. I'm blind. I can't even see. They look like criminals to me, potentially felonies, like serious crimes. So lest you think like somehow, you know, it's an arm's length away, it's not. We're all implicated. Get with the fucking program. Stop, you know, try to remember this stuff, because I have a feeling later this legislative session is going to come up again. I have a feeling it is.
I don't know.
Wheels
I don't
within
know.
Wheels. Wheels within wheels.
Yeah, gears turn other gears. It's kind of how gears work. So, you know.
I don't know if you've heard about gears, but, you know. I've watched how it's made.
See, there you go. Yeah. That's how it works.
I want to make a quick announcement. And maybe some people on this call will join us. There's an event in Middletown on Wednesday, March 25th at 6 p.m. There will be pizza and soft drinks. There will be a great presentation given by yours truly and Mary Caricelli. And we're going to do a no-cap event. We're going to do a police reform, a public safety town hall for the community in Middletown. It's going to be really cool. We got a big panel plan so that the audience can have an interaction with an expert panel. It will include Dr. Tanya Whittle, Tom Donovan Esquire, Professor Jim Nolan, and Terrell Williams from the MOT and NAACP. So yeah,
that's an all-star lineup.
Do we do anything that's not high quality?
No, you go hard. You bring the best every time. High quality. Right? This is no different. Yep. Yeah.
I want to thank our friends at Tide Shift Justice Project, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, and the Middletown Odessa Townsend NAACP. Everybody's sort of signed on to it. So yeah, we're gonna have a very cool time. And at the end, we're gonna have a big escalation ask to sort of get people involved in their community. Just take a little control. Maybe you decide, hey, I'm gonna go to the police accountability board meetings. You know, four of them, six of them, however many there are, and I'm gonna report back. You might get a prize, a beautiful, beautiful Carolina blue no cap t-shirt, 6.1 ounce American cotton.
I've heard it's very high quality. Smooth, very soft.
I mean, yeah. You're going to be like, this is not, it's sort of like we don't do anything like that. We're always producing at a high level here. Everybody knows that. So we'll be talking more about that, but I hope people join that, because we're going to be taking that show on the road. As people know, we did a bunch of police reform and public safety town halls and sort of know your rights stuff in Dover at the end of last year. We're sort of taking that model, and we're gonna take it on the road. So we are doing one in Middletown on the 25th of this month. Also, if you want to do one in your town, let me know, because I think we're going to be coming to Newark, Delaware.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In the summertime, I think.
We have a lot of police that are not particularly reformed here, I got to tell you. We got at least three agencies, possibly four.
Dale, thank you for thanks for coming in. I always like a little history lesson.
Yeah. But, you know. Well, thanks for having me. Glad to rant and rave about private money kill the page. Thanks.
I'll stop using fiat to describe government.
Don't give him an inch.
You know, it's fair enough. It's fair enough, folks.
The other thing I wanted to say quickly is, as you guys know, you know, the catchphrase here is what it is. The reason it's that is because it was part of a false flag. So if you guys remember back, way back, like between Obama and Trump won, there was like this false flag, and they put on like a swing set in a park, left is best, as like a slogan, but it was so stupid. Like everybody, you may have seen this during the George Floyd protest. A guy did a false flag and put Blacks Rule with an anarchy sign in his own driveway. You might be familiar with that one. Right. So it's of that vein. You know, it's just this weird somebody who thinks they're doing like a slogan that's not even really a slogan. That's where that comes from. So I want to caution everyone. When you see something, sometimes it isn't what it really looks like, especially when people are protesting, especially when bombs are dropping in huge metropolitan cities, especially when my friend's getting pulled out of his apartment. So, you know, I know you guys love the internet. You love AI slop. You love all that shit. But most of the stuff you're looking at is fake, just like most of these financial instruments we talked about are fake. And Dale actually always has to remind us to make sure we do our due diligence on shit. So do your due diligence on stuff. Don't be sharing stuff and just using AI slop and gumming up the works. It's embarrassing. Stop doing that. And left is best.